Wisconsin's reputation as a battleground state is well established. President Trump hosted a rally in Green Bay over the weekend that will likely be the first of many. And we're talking about the 2020 presidential race on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Democrats are holding their party convention in Milwaukee as they fight to flip Wisconsin back to blue. So of the 20 candidates seeking the Democratic nomination for president, five have already visited here. And here's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders earlier this month at a rally in Madison.
This weekend, I will be not only here in Wisconsin, but in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. 4 years ago, despite losing the popular vote by 3 million votes, Donald Trump carried all of those states and won enough electoral votes to be elected president.
Does the path to the White House lead through Wisconsin? Did you take in President Trump's rally in Green Bay? And what did you think of his message? We're at 800-642-1234. Craig Gilbert is a political reporter and the Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Nice to be with you.
Well, let's start with President Trump's rally. He was in full campaign mode as he spoke to the boisterous supporters for nearly an hour and a half in Green Bay. What about the president's message did you find noteworthy?
Well, he talked a lot about the economy, which is going to be a centerpiece of his campaign. You know, it was interesting in the midterms, which saw Democratic gains in 2018, there was a lot of discussion about why the economy wasn't working as an issue for Republicans and why Republicans weren't more focused on the economy. But I think we're going to see President Trump very focused on the economy, which plays a bigger role, certainly, in presidential cycles. So that was a big part of his message. Then the sort of classic Trump themes of America first and strong borders. A lot of playing to Wisconsin, a lot of Wisconsin references. You could sort of see the outlines of the Wisconsin message in there, which involves, you know, trade and farms and manufacturing and jobs.
Why do you think President Trump chose to visit Green Bay now and, you know, still a year from the presidential primary?
Well, this was his first re-election rally in Wisconsin, so this is just where we are in the election cycle. This trip was the same night as the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which his decision in recent years to skip that dinner and go somewhere out on the road is kind of symbolic of his differences and his critique of the media and his desire to kind of use the media as a foil, use the White House press corps as a foil in this campaign. So he comes to the heartland. He comes to a state that was pivotal in 2016. And Green Bay is a pivotal region in Wisconsin. It's a region where Donald Trump did really well and helped him carry the state of Wisconsin. I mean, he did in the Green Bay media market, which is a big area. It's like 18 counties in northeastern Wisconsin. So it's not just Green Bay and Brown County, but it's a lot of northern, even farther north counties as well. He won that area by about 17 points, which is really kind of unprecedented in recent decades. And that was emblematic of his, of how kind of rural counties, northern Wisconsin, small towns all sort of carried him to victory in Wisconsin in 2016. It was kind of a victory formula and a coalition we hadn't really seen before in competitive presidential races in Wisconsin. So it made perfect sense for him to come to that part of the state and to come to this particular state at this stage in the campaign.
We're talking with Craig Gilbert, political reporter and Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you attend or listen to President Trump's rally in Green Bay? Did you think of his message? What questions do you have about Wisconsin's recent elections and what they mean for the 2020 presidential race? Call in. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Craig, what have Wisconsin's recent elections taught us about President Trump's potential strengths here, but also his vulnerabilities ahead on the campaign trail?
Well, we've seen some you know, we see in the polling some pretty stark kind of demographic patterns, and we've seen in recent election cycles some pretty stark geographic patterns. And the geographic patterns I'm referring to, when you go back and look at how Donald Trump did compared to the previous nominee, Mitt Romney, for his party, and you look at how Governor Walker did in 2018 compared to his previous campaigns for governor in 2014 and earlier, and even looking at the nonpartisan April Supreme Court race and comparing that to previous court races, how the conservative candidate did compared to how the conservative candidate did in previous races, you sort of see the same geographic shifts. You see sort of northern Wisconsin and parts of western Wisconsin kind of shifting to the right, shifting to the Republican column, and you see Republicans doing worse in the Madison and Milwaukee metropolitan areas, including in the Republican parts of some of the Republican parts of those areas. I mean, the kind of classic Republican suburban counties like Waukesha, which are still being won by Republicans, but Trump didn't do as well in Waukesha as Mitt Romney did, even though he won the state, and Scott Walker didn't do as well in Waukesha as he did in 2014. So we're seeing these patterns, and they're kind of there's kind of a shift going on. It's part of, I think, an education divide and a urban-rural divide that is growing bigger, and you see it in the polling too, where Donald Trump, you know, is making gains among kind of white blue-collar men, but he's losing ground among women, especially women with college degrees. So you see gender, you see class and education, and you sort of see it on the map in the difference between kind of what less densely populated places are doing and more densely populated places are doing. And I think these trends are ongoing, but Donald Trump kind of has accelerated these trends.
Well, speaking of the Waukesha area, it's noteworthy, and Milwaukee, since 2016, Wisconsin Republicans have lost three national figures who really helped propel the party here in Wisconsin. You had Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Scott Walker, you had Reince Priebus. What has changed since 2016 that could help or be a challenge for President Trump as you see these main figures go to the background?
Yeah, I mean, so if you made a list of things that, you know, Democrats might be hopeful about, you know, they would include the fact that, you know, Donald Trump's not going to be running against Hillary Clinton, who is a very unpopular candidate. And Hillary Clinton, on top of that, didn't really campaign in Wisconsin, sort of took it for granted. The Democrats obviously aren't going to do that this time around. They're holding their convention here in 2020, which is a pretty strong signal that they're not going to take Wisconsin and the other kind of blue wall states like Michigan and Pennsylvania for granted. I mean, that is their path to retaking the White House, is winning those three states. So that's not going to happen again. You have a Democratic governor instead of a Republican governor. You had this sort of Republican leadership infrastructure in Wisconsin with Paul Ryan as the House Speaker. Reince Priebus was the national Republican chairman. They were both kind of directing money to Wisconsin. And, of course, Scott Walker was governor, and you had a history of kind of a Walker machine in the state. That's all gone. At the same time, you know, Donald Trump's the incumbent now. I mean, he was sort of running his campaign on the fly in 2016. The incumbent has the ability, while the other party is kind of beating its brains out trying to select a nominee, to lay the groundwork for a campaign, and he's going to do that. And you see it, you know, with his trip to Wisconsin this time around. So an incumbent running on a strong economy is a powerful combination with the time to put together a campaign.
Greg Gilbert is our guide. He is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in with your questions, perspectives, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Wisconsin's recent elections and what they mean for the 2020 presidential race? What do you make of Wisconsin getting so much attention from presidential candidates? We'll be back in a minute for more analysis on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the 2020 presidential race and why the path to the White House seems to lead through Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. At a rally on Saturday in Green Bay, President Trump defended his global trade war with the European Union over tariffs.
NAFTA was a disaster. And what we had, the one thing I wanted more than anything else, I want to make it almost impossible for a company to leave Wisconsin and leave other states and go to Mexico.
What issue do you think will be key to Republicans or Democrats winning Wisconsin's electoral votes in 2020? Do you plan to help with voter canvassing or with a campaign? Did you attend or listen to President Trump's rally in Green Bay? And what about the message? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us WPR Mornings. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert stays with us for analysis. Craig, let's take a moment here on trade, on NAFTA. You know, Harley Davidson and our state's dairy industry both feeling a whole lot of pressure from the president's trade policies. How is President Trump walking that line as he goes to these rallies, as Wisconsin industries get caught up in his trade war?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a really an issue that cuts different ways, and I've seen it in kind of traveling around the state talking to farmers. I mean, Trump did really well in a lot of farming communities, yet, you know, the trade wars, quote unquote, that are going on have really hurt a lot of those farming communities. But there are farmers who voted for Trump who are hurting, but who still, you know, kind of see him as, you know, they kind of are persuaded by his sales pitch and his message that, you know, there's short-term pain for long-term gain, and that he's trying to right, you know, he's trying to level the playing field and make things fairer for Americans and American farmers. So, you know, his argument, the kind of America first, they're ripping us off, we're going to get a better deal, is, you know, resonates with even some people who are hurt in the short term by the fallout from those policies. And so that's kind of like the push and pull that's going to play out, and it's going to be one of the factors in this election. You see the same thing on the manufacturing side. So it's going to be really interesting to see where people end up in the end on this issue who are directly impacted by the policies.
I'm wondering, will Democrats seize on that push and pull? Because at the rally, the president brought up poverty, jobs, unemployment. Is the economy going to be key to the Democrats' messaging in 2020 and trade as well?
Well, you're going to hear very different messages. I mean, the Democrats are obviously, and Republicans are going to be talking about the economy in very different ways. And Democrats will argue that the, you know, that the statistical performance of the economy is not reflected in sort of the real life experience of people who are further down the wage scale and the income chain, people who are not as wealthy. There'll be debates over who benefited from the tax cut, the Republican tax cuts. All that's going to be part of the rhetorical battle and part of the campaign. And both sides, I think, are going to be fully engaged in that.
And we've seen Democrats stumping in Wisconsin already in recent months. Why are we seeing these early Democrats, a field so large, already visiting this battleground state?
So I think the main reason is that Wisconsin is a state that Democrats know they have to win. I mean, it's an important state for President Trump, but he doesn't mathematically have to win Wisconsin to get reelected because of those, the three famous blue wall states, the states that have been voting Democratic and then flipped to Trump and delivered the election to him, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. He only needs to win one of them. But Democrats need to win all three if nothing else on the map changes. So it's a vital state in the fall of 2020 for Democrats. It's also the state where Democrats are having their political convention in July of 2020. And it's also a state that does have, so it's got this sort of symbolic importance as a, and you see that with Bernie Sanders, the way he talks about Wisconsin. He won the Wisconsin primary in 2016, so that's kind of like a feather in his cap.
And but he's been back already and making quite a presence here in Wisconsin.
And so it has this sort of symbolic importance as this kind of blue-collar, Midwestern state, the kind of state that Democrats have won in the past and need to win again. And so part of the argument you're going to hear on the Democratic side is who's the kind of Democrat that can win back Wisconsin. And then finally, we do have a primary. We have a primary in April of next year. And while it's very late in the process and the field will be heavily winnowed, it's no one, you know, there's a good chance that the front runner won't have wrapped up the nomination by then. And Wisconsin kind of sits out there all by itself on the calendar in early April. It could be a really interesting showdown late in the race. And so it makes sense on that level, too, for Democrats to come here.
Okay, so then let's look at the Democratic National Convention coming to Milwaukee next July. How will that event, that presence, raise the nation's attention on Wisconsin as we get closer to Election Day?
Well, it's like a, I mean, in some ways, it's like a big, long, giant, incredibly expensive campaign commercial. So it's a vehicle it's a vehicle for the Democratic Party to send the message it wants to send, the voters it wants to talk to. So there's that piece of it. And then there's, you know, this massive coverage and attention and all the media. And it's going to kind of reinforce sort of Wisconsin's importance and the role it plays in presidential politics and, the politics of the state and how it fits in to the national debate, all these issues that kind of resonate in Wisconsin they've been talking about, like trade and dairy and manufacturing, are going to get, you know, amplified during the coverage of the convention. So it's going to be a pretty phenomenal week, and Wisconsin obviously is going to be center stage in, you know, before taking center stage in the fall once more. It reminds me of 2004 during the Bush-Kerry campaign, when Wisconsin was like basically one of the three or four states where the candidates were spending the most time and money, and they were practically camped out here in late October, and we could see something like that again. So center stage in July of 2020 and center stage again after Labor Day of 2020.
We're talking with Craig Gilbert. He is a political reporter and the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at Wisconsin's place as we look forward to the 2020 presidential race and where Wisconsin stands as a battleground state. You can join in with your observations and perhaps the rallies that you want to attend at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Craig, you've pointed out that President Trump's negative ratings make him especially reliant on the votes of people who don't like him, who don't trust him or have perhaps mixed feelings about him. What would he need to do to win over those voters? Do we know what that could look like?
Well, we know what it looked like in 2016 when both candidates were pretty unpopular, but Trump was even more unpopular than Hillary Clinton. And yet, a lot of people who didn't like both candidates voted for Trump. I mean, partly because he was the candidate of change. And so that happened in 2016. There were people that had huge reservations about his personality, but they voted for him to kind of shake things up or because they didn't like the alternative. And so part of what's going to go on in 2020 is the effort of Trump, of President Trump and his campaign, to sort of portray the Democratic alternative as unacceptable, because his own negatives are high, as we've discussed. So if the opponent is equally or more or has equal or higher negatives, then it makes it easier for Donald Trump to make the case for the votes of people who have big qualms about him or big qualms about both candidates. So that's one part of it. But there's also, you know, ongoing. I mean, there's been this dynamic where there are people that will tell you, you know, I don't think he should be on Twitter. I don't like the things he says. I don't like everything he does or his behavior, but I'm happy with the economy, or I like some of his policies. And that's going to be a huge dynamic. I mean, there are people that like his policies but don't like his personality, but the policies are more important. There are people that kind of like his policies but don't like his personality, but the behavior and the personality is more important. And so these kind of segments of the electorate of conflicted voters are going to really help determine the outcome of the election.
Okay, so before we have to let you go, several states, including Wisconsin, have been involved in these recent lawsuits over partisan gerrymandering. Is it possible that any of these lawsuits could affect the next presidential election?
Well, there's going to be a Supreme Court decision involving other states, Maryland and North Carolina, this summer, we think. And then once that happens, the litigation over Wisconsin's plan can go forward. It's unclear whether anything could happen in time to affect the maps next year. But regardless of what happens next year with the maps, you're going to see new maps drawn after the 2020 election. The most important fact in Wisconsin is that there's almost certainly going to be divided power between the governor and the legislature after the 2020 election, because you have a Democratic governor and there's a good chance the Republicans will retain at least one chamber of the legislature. And so you're going to have the situation we had before 2010, which is probably a court-approved map that's not going to be super favorable to one side or the other. Right now we have a map that's very favorable to the Republicans. And so you will probably see changes after the 2020 election, but maybe not before the 2020 election.
Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Craig Gilbert is a political reporter and the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up, we check in on a program at the UW La Crosse trying to stop the use of single-use plastic straws. We'll look at their strategy 1 year in. That's after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On many college campuses, single-use plastic straws are coming to an end. We're talking about a program at the UW La Crosse on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Plastic straws are polluting our already plastic-choked oceans. The Ocean Conservancy's 2017 International Coastal Cleanup uncovered more than 600,000 plastic straws in beaches and waterways around the world. What do you do to manage your plastic usage? What sustainable measures do you follow? Join in at 800-642-1234. Megan Severson is State Director for the Wisconsin Environment. That's an affiliate of the citizen advocacy organization Environment America. Megan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And Haley Jarecki is here. She's Vice President of the UW La Crosse Student Association. She's also a senior studying geography and environmental science. Haley, thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me as well.
Well, Haley, let's start with you. Where did the idea to have this program on the UW La Crosse campus start?
So it started when I was running for vice president for Student Association last May in 2018 as part of our platform for our campaign across campus. And so Ben and I, who was running for president with me, we really spread the idea as a platform to run on. And it really started to catch the attention of students across campus with sustainable actions, which is really exciting to see a majority of UWL students so engaged in sustainability on campus.
And so the thing is here is that on the UW La Crosse campus, you don't see these single-use plastic straws.
Not anymore, nope. So because with our platform, we were able to pursue that into some campus legislation per se. So we put a referendum out there in fall of 2018 to the entire campus body, and they voted, and 86% of students said, no, we don't want to use single-use straws. And so that's kind of the first step that we've taken, and now we have it's kind of a pseudo ban, so we still have them upon request in case there's some dietary needs or other restrictions. However, for the most part, we're not offering with any drinks, with a few exceptions.
How have you managed the needs of some people who do need to use straws?
You know, it has been a little bit of a hitch trying to figure that out. There are certain food items like smoothies that do require a straw. And so we do have our dining services on campus looking into other options and alternative options that aren't plastic. So something like a paper straw, or there's even to go so far as like the pasta straw that's out there, which is pretty interesting, but also taking into account cost effectiveness.
Wait, what's the pasta straw?
You know, I've it's been one of those phenomenons running around on Facebook and other platforms that is very interesting, but maybe not potentially useful for campus.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Well, Megan, let's look broadly at the impact of single-use plastics in the state, like straws. What do we know about the effects?
Sure. Well, first, let me just say, you know, congrats to Haley, and thanks so much for having this be a great way to start or to continue this conversation. I think there are a lot of just great examples of youth leaders like Haley that are really setting ambitious expectations for what we should be doing as a state. So thanks so much, Haley. You know, plastics are really cheap and convenient. They're a big part of what's driven our consumer economy, right? So this encourages us to make, use, and toss at the greatest possible speed. And we often don't think twice about the convenient products that we're using before we're throwing them away. So single-use plastics really dominate this space, especially plastic straws. In the United States, we consume an estimated 175 million disposable plastic straws every day.
Wait, every day?
Every day.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And, you know, and the negative effects of plastic straws have been very well documented. You mentioned before this show, you know, the sea turtle. I think a lot of people saw the video of scientists extracting a plastic straw from a sea turtle's nose. But plastic fragments are in, you know, they've been found in over 600 species, including 86% of sea turtles and almost half of all seabird and marine mammal species. Some of the impacts in Wisconsin, there's a study that came out that showed that even microplastics were found in beer that's made from water coming from the Great Lakes. So despite being used only once, plastic straws, like all plastics, persist in the environment for hundreds of years, and then often, yeah, break into these smaller plastics called microplastics. So, you know, it might seem innocuous, but these small items easily escape landfills into our streams and our lakes. They ultimately make their way to the oceans. So really, really pervasive in our society.
We're talking with Megan Severson of Wisconsin Environment and Haley Jarecki of UW La Crosse's Student Association, talking about single-use plastics in Wisconsin. And there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of banning or cutting back on single-use plastics? Has this worked for you? Do you think twice about using a straw? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Haley, what has the effect been on your campus of not using plastic straws, except under certain circumstances? What has been the impact money-wise and trash, et cetera?
So, and this is funny, we were just talking about this, how because plastic straws, they're only 0.025% of the total plastics that are used throughout the world. So we haven't really seen a huge cost decrease because plastic straws are very cheap, which is part of the problem. And so because of that, and it's also hard to gauge a big number with the university because we buy them in bulk in the beginning of the year. So, and especially until next year, again, we don't have certain numbers quite yet. However, you do see a decreased use across campus, which is really encouraging. So we do we try to make it accessible to students to buy alternative options like a metal straw. So we've had various campaigns through student organizations offering them for free for attending an event, or through the bookstore we have them for sale. Most importantly, this has started a larger campaign of looking at single-use plastics in general. So now from this ban, we've had several committees and ad hoc committees and groups pop up that have now dealt with future decisions like plastic bags on campus, so making sure we're banning those. We just started a recycling program with Trex, which is a company that takes plastic bags and then turns them into benches that we can put on campus. And so students can bring them in from all over, and as long as we get enough, then we'll be able to have this cool bench on our campus that says, hey, look what we can do. And then hopefully that'll be a continuous program. So I think that's really the biggest result we've seen out of the ban, is it's really just bringing more attention to it. Even if we're not making the biggest impact with just straws, it's really a conversation starter of what else we can do.
Well, Haley, lots of trends do start on college campuses. What are you seeing with your friends in terms of using metal straws? Do you see them around campus? Is it catching on at all?
Yeah, it really is. I would say I think the biggest thing is, well, I forget to bring it with me. And so I think anecdotally, that's kind of the biggest hitch we run into. And so the coolest solutions I've seen, and a lot of me and my friends, a lot of what we use, are the ones that you can attach to our keychain. So you have, it comes, it collapses, it's a collapsible little metal straw, and it puts on your keychain, and then it has a little container that comes with it with a little mini brush in there. So you have cleanliness on the go. And it's really convenient, because then I can't say that, oh, I forgot my straw, and I can't use the excuse of convenience anymore, because it's with me every day. So that's one of the best things to do. I think that is the biggest excuse you hear is, oh, well, I have a reusable mug, but I forgot to bring it with me. And it's getting to a point now that that excuse is no longer valid, and I get sick of hearing it.
Well,
there's so much we can do.
Megan, what challenges are part of managing plastic in Wisconsin?
Well, there's, when it comes to the plastic, the amount of plastic that we have in the state, there are a lot. I think, you know, to Haley's point about starting a conversation, it's true, plastic straws are not the only plastics, and it's one piece. But it is so important that we, you know, reduce our plastic consumption and be thinking beyond plastic. In Wisconsin, we have, you know, we really have seen, well, even across the country, just a massive increase in plastic production. So since, you know, Earth Day was last week, or you know, just a week ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Since the first Earth Day in 1970s, over the last 49 years, plastic production has increased more than tenfold, from roughly 35 million to 400 million tons annually. Roughly half of that plastic is used for packaging or other single-use products. And, you know, recycling is good, but it only gets us so far. I think the much more common sense thing to do in Wisconsin is to look at the ways we can actually reduce the plastics that we're using, because, you know, if we use less, we won't have to recycle as much, and it's that simple. And then there are lots of ways in which Wisconsin needs to do better even when it comes to recycling. We compiled a report last fall that found that Wisconsin is one of the more wasteful states in the nation based on recent data. Only Madison and Waukesha have managed to surpass the national average recycling rate of 34.7%. You know, I think gathering comprehensive data is really crucial to understanding the problems, establishing goals, and making improvements. And, you know, so far, Wisconsin hasn't established any statewide goals for waste reduction, recycling, or compost. Another challenge is more when it comes to sort of the international trade of waste and recycling products. So Wisconsin has an opportunity right now to address its excessive trash output and catch up with other states when it comes to waste. A lot of folks heard of recent changes in international waste trade have opened up a new window of opportunity, especially when it comes to China's recyclables.
We're looking at efforts at UW-La Crosse and plastics with Megan Severson of Wisconsin Environment and Haley Jarecki of UW-La Crosse's Student Association. You have a line, 800-642-1234. What do you think of banning single-use plastics? Have you made changes in your life around plastic? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're checking in on plastic straw bans on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. California became the first state to enact a statewide ban on plastic straws in sit-down restaurants last year, with the stipulation that customers can still request one. And major chains like McDonald's, Starbucks have all gotten on board. Closer to home, Miller Park is no longer handing out straws as of last week. But people with disabilities have spoken out on social media, noting that many with disabilities rely on plastic straws to drink. We're looking at how UW-La Crosse is handling its ban on plastic straws with your insights along the way. What do you do to manage your plastic usage? What sustainable measures do you follow? And are you someone with limitations? who relies on the use of straws. What is your reaction? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Megan Severson is State Director for Wisconsin Environment, which is an affiliate of Environment America. And Haley Jarecki is with us, who sits on the UW La Crosse Student Association. Let's go to the phones now with Mike joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. How's it going this morning?
Going well. So what do you think of this conversation?
Well, I'm all for it. I love recycling. I love repurposing, specifically repurposing plastics in large containers for gardening and lawn care. I have a rain barrel, and I'm always on the lookout for large containers for gardening use. And I was wondering if your guests had any insight further than just rain barrels or using them as starters for plants, if there's any other way we can reuse plastics for that purpose.
Megan?
I think that's a great question. And to me, there's limitless opportunities for how to utilize, especially those types of plastics that are intended for, that can be used for gardening. I think when it comes to some of the packaging, the single-use throwaway items that can't be or are more difficult to recycle, that's really some of the most problematic plastics that we've been really studying.
Yeah, Megan, what are some local examples, some bright spots you see in recycling?
There are so many great examples locally of what's being done. So obviously, the UW La Crosse ban on straws. There are also a lot of businesses and local communities that are, doing efforts. So the grocer chain Kroger, which is the parent company of Pick and Save and Roundy's, announced last year that it plans to phase out its single-use plastic shopping bags by 2025. There are restaurants like Cafe Mana in Brookfield, which uses no plastic or styrofoam and uses compostable takeout containers. And then there are groups of folks coming together, like the students at UW La Crosse, but in communities around the state to try to assess how they're going to tackle waste. So folks in Racine have formed the Racine Zero Waste Commission, which is a group of municipal governments, manufacturers, businesses, nonprofits, and residents all working to reduce and eliminate the waste stream into their landfill.
Haley, have you talked with other UW system schools, student leaders, about what you're doing at UW La Crosse and seeing if you can replicate it elsewhere?
Yeah, so we have a monthly meeting across the state where all student leaders get together and kind of talk about common issues and because we were the first school to pursue this in the UW system, a lot of campuses have asked us, so how is that even possible? How did that start? Which is great because then we are able to share our successes and our challenges with other schools. But more attention has really been drawn to our Green Fund, which is a student elected fee to pay towards sustainable action on campus. And so we were really the pioneers for that 10 years ago in 2008. Our leaders of Student Association came up with this idea that we want students, this is a priority for students to have sustainability action on campus. So let's have a fund and let's have some resources available to make that happen. And so other schools have really come up to us and asked, how does this work? Other schools have been able to use our bylaws and our projects as examples. So one really great example is a couple of years ago, we put low flow shower heads in our residence halls. And so it's really gotten the conversation started again, what the projects are that we can do and being creative for such a large campus and something that can be shared across the campus or across the state.
And how much do students pay into the Green Fund per semester?
So per semester, it's between $5 to $7. So it's a maximum of $7. This year, students are paying in $5, depending on enrollment. So we're at pretty high enrollment at UWL. So we've got about $5 per student is paid toward this fund.
And then when you use those dollars in the fund to pay for these projects around campus, like low-flow showerheads?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Well, let's go back to the phones now with Alice joining us from McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Alice.
Hi there. One comment I would like to make, I always have to chuckle when people are concerned about plastic straws, and that is you know, we used to drink out of cups all the time. What is wrong with drinking out of the paper cup? I think California's ideas are great. Their practice, they offer a straw for those people who need to have one, and people can ask for one, but it's not automatically given to them. Anything applies to plastic bags. I think we can take our own and go back to the car and pick them up if we forgot to bring them in.
So,
that's my comment.
Alice, thank you for that comment. And where did we become so reliant, Megan, on plastic straws?
It's a great question. And I would combine it with straws and single-use plastics. I mentioned earlier that, you know, our consumer-driven economy has really, over the decades, encouraged us to make, use, and toss as rapidly as possible. That also goes for things like electronics. So I think that we're now at this point where we have this abundance of plastics. It's harming our wildlife and our waterways, our health. We're paying for it. You know, we're paying for just all these extra products that don't really need to be there. And so I think we really need to be reducing our plastic consumption and thinking beyond plastics. Bands like this at UW-La Crosse are great conversation starters because we need our leaders at local, state, and the federal level to take action to eliminate the most common and hazardous single-use plastics. I would lump in plastic straws, but also polystyrene foam takeout containers and single-use plastic bags. Unfortunately, the legislature passed a state law in 2016 that prohibits local governments from banning or charging a fee or regulating packaging. But until that's possible, I think there are so many things that businesses, schools, and universities can do to cut this plastic waste pretty dramatically.
And Megan, what does this look like on the world stage? You had mentioned China and the impact of recycling we do here and how that relates around the world. Can you connect us?
Yeah, this is fascinating. So, you know, for decades, cities throughout the United States sent millions of tons of scrap material to China to be recycled. This past year, China effectively stopped accepting our waste, claiming it was too contaminated and unsellable for recycling. So with basically nowhere to go, you know, recyclables have been piling up in sorting facilities throughout Wisconsin and many other states. This has increased service costs, decreased revenue, and in some cases led to recycling collectors to stop their services. I will say this also, though, brings opportunity for Wisconsin. Nationwide recycling brings economic benefits in the form of about $1 billion in wages. Wisconsin has an opportunity right now to develop its recycling economy through expanded collections, sorting, and end market solutions that were previously provided by China. There's some great examples in Green Bay with Green Bay Packaging Inc. The city of Kenosha is hoping to introduce automated recycling system, and Milwaukee is considering investing in new sorting equipment. So there are lots of good examples.
Things around the corner.
Exactly. Yeah.
Megan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Megan Severson is State Director for Wisconsin Environment, which is an affiliate of the citizen advocacy organization Environment America. And Haley, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Always love talking about it.
Haley Jarecki is the Vice President of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse Student Association. We've been talking about their ban on plastic straws as they move forward. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.